From the village of Debra Mariam, Boris took a branch road that ran alongside the Dandera River directly southwards. The road they had followed the previous day from Lake Tana was shown on the map as a major highway. It had been bad enough, but this track that they were now on was marked as a secondary road, not passable in all weather. To compound matters, it seemed that most of the heavy traffic that had torn up the main road had followed this same track. They came to a place where some huge vehicle had become bogged down in the rain-saturated earth, and the efforts to free it had left areas of ploughed land and excavation like a bomb crater that resembled an old photograph of the battlefields of First World War Flanders. Twice during the day, the Toyota too became stuck in this foul ground. Each time this happened, the big truck that was following them came up, and all the servants swarmed down from the cargo body to push and heave the Toyota through. Even Nicholas stripped to the waist to work with them in the mud to free it.
"If you had only listened to my advice," Boris grumbled, "we would not be here. There is no game where you want to go, and there are no roads worth the name either."
In the early afternoon, they stopped beside the river for an al fresco lunch. Nicholas went down to the pool beside the road to wash off the mud and filth of the morning's labours. He had been in the forefront of the efforts to keep the truck moving. Royan followed him down the slope and perched on a rock above the pool while he stripped off his shirt and knelt at the verge to splash himself with the cold mountain water. The river was muddy yellow and swollen from the rainstorms. "I don't think Boris believes your story about the striped dik-dik," she warned him. "Tessé tells me that he is suspicious of what we are up to." She watched with interest as he sluiced his chest and upper arms. Where the sun had not touched it, his skin was very white and unblemished. His chest hair was thick and dark. She decided that his body was good to look at. "He's the type that would go through our luggage if he gets a chance," Nicholas agreed. "You didn't bring anything with you that has any clues for him? No papers or notes?" "Only the satellite photograph and my notebooks are all in my own shorthand. He won't be able to make anything of them." "Be very careful what you discuss with Tessé." "She's a dear. There's nothing underhand about her." Heatedly, Royan came to the defence of her new friend. "She may be all right, but she's married to my chum Boris. Her first allegiance lies there. No matter what your feelings towards her, don't trust either of them." He dried himself on his shirt, slipped it on, and then buttoned it over his chest. "Let's go and get something to eat." Back at the parked truck, Boris was pulling the cork from a bottle of South African white wine. He poured a tumblerful for Nicholas. Chilled in the river, it was crisp and fruity. Tessé offered them cold roast chicken and injera bread, the flat, thin sheets of stone-ground, unleavened bread of the country. The trials and labours of the morning's travels faded into insignificance as Royan lay beside Nicholas in the grass, and they watched a bearded vulture sailing high against the blue. It saw them and drifted overhead curiously, twisting its head to look down at them. Its eyes were masked in black like those of a highwayman, and the distinctive wedge-shaped tail feathers flirted with the wind the way the fingers of a concert pianist would stroke the ivories of the keyboard. When it was time to go on, Nicholas gave his hand to lift her to her feet. It was one of the rare moments of physical contact, and she held on to his fingers for just a second or two longer than was strictly necessary. There was no improvement in the surface of the track as they drew nearer to the rim of the gorge, and the hours passed in this bone-jarring, teeth-rattling progress. The track snaked over a rise and then dog-legged down the far slope. Halfway down, Boris swore in Russian as they came round the hairpin bend of a high earthen bank to find a huge diesel truck slewed across the track, almost blocking it. Even though they'd been following the tracks of this convoy of vehicles since the previous day, this was the first of them that they had encountered, and it took Boris by surprise. He hit his brake so suddenly that his passengers were almost catapulted from their seats. But on the steep incline in the mud, the brakes did not bring them to a complete halt. Boris was forced to change down into his lowest gear and steer for the narrow gap between the bank and the truck. From the back seat, Royan looked out of the window beside her, up the high side of the diesel truck. There was a company name and logo emblazoned in scarlet on the green background. A strong feeling of déjà vu overcame her as she stared at the image. She had seen this sign recently, but her memory cheated her. She could not recall the time or the place. She only knew that it was of vital importance that she should remember. The side of the Toyota scraped against the metal of the truck, and then they were past it. Boris leaned out of his window and shook his fist at the driver of the large vehicle. He was a local man, probably recruited in Addis by the owner of the truck. Grinning at Boris's antics, he leaned out of his own cab to return the clenched fist salute, adding a nice little touch by jerking a raised forefinger upwards.
"Dung-eater!"
Boris roared with outrage at being bested in the exchange, but he did not stop.
No use even talking to them. What do they know? Black chimps.
For the rest of the wearisome journey, Royan remained silent and withdrawn, shaken and troubled by the conviction that she had seen the trademark of the winged red horse before, with, set above it in a pennant, the name of the company, Pegasus Exploration. As they approached the end of the day's journey at last, they passed a signpost beside the track. The supporting legs of the sign was solidly set in concrete, and the artwork was of such high quality that it could only have been that of a professional sign writer. Across the top of the board, an arrow indicated a newly bulldozed road that headed off to the right, and the directions read, Pegasus Exploration. Base camp, 1 kilometer, private road, no entry to unauthorized traffic. The scarlet horse reared in the centre of the board with its wings spread wide on the point of flight. Now she gasped aloud as the elusive memory came upon her with stunning clarity. She remembered where she had last seen the flying red horse. In an instant she was transported back into the icy waters of an English salmon river, flung from the rolling body of the Land Rover, the huge man-truck roaring over the bridge above her, and, for a subliminal pulse of time, the prancing red horse upon its side.
"It's the same!"
she almost shouted out loud, but controlled herself. The terror of the moment returned to her with full force, and she found herself breathing hard and her heart racing as though she had run a long way. "It cannot be a coincidence," she assured herself silently, "and I am not mistaken. It is the same company, Pegasus Exploration." She was withdrawn and distracted for the last few miles of the journey, until the track they were following ended abruptly on the brink of the sheer cliffs of the escarpment. Here Boris pulled onto the grassy verge and stopped the engine.
"This is as far as we ride. We camp here tonight. My big truck is not far behind. They will make camp as soon as they arrive. Tomorrow we will go down into the gorge on foot."
As they dismounted, Royan tugged at Nicholas' arm.
"I must speak to you," she whispered urgently,
and she followed him as he led her along the bank of the river. He found a place for them to sit side by side with their legs dangling over the top. Beside them, the swollen yellow river seemed to sense what lay ahead of it. The cold mountain waters speeded up, swirled amongst the rocks, and gathered themselves for that dizzying leap out into empty space. The cliff below them was a sheer wall of rock almost 1,000 feet deep. It was so high that in the evening light the abyss far below was a dark, mysterious place, its bottom hidden from them by shadow and spray from the falls. As Royan looked down into it, her sense of balance swirled with vertigo. She cringed back from the edge and found herself instinctively leaning against Nicholas's shoulder to steady herself. Only when they had touched did she realize what she was doing, and she pulled away from him self-consciously. The muddied waters of the Dundira River leapt from the brink and were miraculously transformed into curtains of ethereal lacework as they fell. Like the skirts of a waltzing bride, they shimmered and swirled, and rainbows of light played through them as though from an embroidery of seed pearls. Still falling, The columns of white spray twisted and changed into lovely but ephemeral shapes, until they struck the lower ledges of the glistening black rock and exploded outwards into fresh clouds of white that at last screened the dark depths of the abyss with an opalescent veil. It was with a conscious effort that Royan pulled her mind away from the awe-inspiring scene and back to the troubled present. "Nicky, do you remember I told you about the truck that forced my mother and me over the bridge in the Land Rover?" "Of course." His expression was mystified as he studied her face. "You were upset. What is it, Ryan?" "The truck had sign writing down the sides of the trailers that it was towing." "Yes, you told me, yes, green and red. You told me that you didn't get a good enough look to read the sign." "It was the same truck we passed this afternoon. I saw the sign at the same angle as before, and it came back to me. The Red Pegasus, the Flying Horse." He studied her face for a while. "Are you absolutely certain?" "Absolutely," she nodded vehemently. Nicholas stared out over the magnificent panorama of the gorge spread below them. It was 40 miles to the far wall of the canyon, but in the brilliant rain-washed air it seemed so close that he could reach across and touch it. "A coincidence?" he wondered at last. "Do you think so?" "A very strange and wonderful coincidence, then. Pegasus in both Yorkshire and Gojo. Do you accept that?" "It doesn't make sense. The truck that hit you was stolen." "Was it?" she demanded. "Are we sure of that? If it wasn't, then let's hear your ideas. If you were planning an assassination, would you rely on stealing a truck conveniently left at a little chef for you?" He shook his head. "Go on." "Suppose you arranged for your own truck to be placed there for you, and for your driver to report it stolen only after you had a good head start on the police." "It's possible," he agreed without enthusiasm. "Whoever murdered Duryed and made 2 further attempts to kill me obviously has considerable resources at his disposal. He is able to make arrangements in Egypt and England. On top of that, he has the 7th scroll in his possession. He has our notes and all our workings and translations, which point him clearly to this spot on the Abai River. Just suppose that he has control of a company like Pegasus. Is there any reason why he can't be here in Ethiopia, just as we are, right at this moment?" Nicholas was silent for a while. He picked up a stone from the ledge beside him and tossed it out over the cliff. They both watched it drop away, dwindling in size until it vanished in the veils of spray far below where they sat. Abruptly, Nicholas stood up and reached for her hand to pull her to her feet beside him. "Come on," he said. "Where are we going?" "Pegasus Base Camp. Let's go and have a chat to the site foreman." Boris protested angrily and hurried to intervene when Nicholas climbed into the Toyota and started the engine. "Where the hell do you think you're going?" "Sightseeing," Nicholas let in the clutch. "Back in an hour." "Hey, English, my truck!" He ran to catch up with them, but Nicholas accelerated away. "Charge me for the hire," he grinned back at Boris in the rearview mirror. They reached the signposted turnoff and followed the sidetrack over the ridge. The Pegasus camp lay on the far side. Nicholas braked to a halt on the crest of the rise, and they studied it in silence. An area of about 10 acres had been cleared and levelled. It was surrounded by a barbed wire security fence with a single closed gate. 3 of the massive diesel trucks in their green and red livery were parked in a rank inside the fence. There were also several smaller vehicles and a tall mobile drilling rig in the line. The rest of the yard was filled with prospecting equipment and stores. There were stacks of drilling rods and steel core boxes, wooden crates of spares, and several 144-gallon drums of diesel and oil and drilling mud. The drums and the stores were stacked with a neatness and sense of good order that was startling in this wild and rocky landscape.